So let's turn to the preliminary liberating instructions. Great meditations and contemplations. And Shalom, if you would just increase the tempo a little bit. So, conductor. Then making sure that you let the entire refuge tree, that's the Three Roots refuge tree, let the entire refuge tree dissolve into your body, speech, and mind, and have the feeling that we are going to become and manifest all those sources of refuge. That's the Vajrayana Mahamudra Dzogchen Vir. We someday will have those abilities and qualities manifesting in our being.
Generating bodhicitta. sad or journeying or long, La Major dear abbess, pardon me.
May all sentient beings which from sorrow be free from suffering, be joyful and truly abide in supreme happiness. Regenerate the supreme mind, impartial towards all, in order to attain the heart of awakening. In order that we may fully benefit the beings of the six realms, we must attain the stage of Buddha Buddha in this very lifetime.
Therefore, be very diligent upon this past teaching, the path of the loosely clear of Ajahnastas.
Satta Sambhamaya Manupalaya Vendra Satta Taino Padusha Dito Me Bhava Sutta Kaya Me Bhava Supa Kaya Me Bhava Anurakta Me Bhava Sarva Siddhi Me Raya Sarva Karma Tsucha Me Chisam Shriyam Guru Vam Ahaha Ho Bhagavan Sarva Tataya
Bless us to accomplish the rainbow eye.
So more on the hollow body practice, but we're going to go inner, and explore this in a very deep way, right through to the inner yogas and so on. But does anybody have a, perhaps someone has a handout of the hollow body for Jack? Is that possible? You have it. Okay, great. All right. He has a hollow body. So first of all, let's start, before I enter into some points of instruction, and hopefully we'll get a chance to do some contemplation. Any questions arising out of the meditation that you've been doing? If you had a chance to do some meditation today. Yes, Adam.
My question is that when I expand the hollow body, am I visualizing my skin taking the form of whatever room I'm in, for example, so I would become the shape of a house, or am I visualizing my actual my body getting larger?
Fantastic question. Maybe out of innocence, but great. No, you wouldn't visualize yourself as a house or a field or anything like that. So this is the dilemma of meditating in your body compared to meditating in a yidam body. So when you expand to the size of a room or the size of a house, the actual edges of the house become your skin of your body. If you're practicing hollow body in your body, your hollow body, then the edge of the skin, the covering of the skin, is the size of the room. Otherwise, what you do is you become a room. Becoming a room is even less of a vehicle of your body as a vehicle for liberation. So you can see the advantages of a yidam body, which is actually an enlightened body. And today's what, Thursday? Friday. On Saturday, the empowerment of Guru Rinpoche and Mandawara, which is a yidam body. For those that have never had it. Also, if you want to try, because you're being introduced to Vajrasattva, for those who've never practiced yidam body, do we have a Vajrasattva Tonka somewhere? We could put one up. But there's a picture in the Namdru Yangtze prayer book of Vajrasattva, illuminated being. Actually, there's a couple pictures of Vajrasattva. They just look a little different. But this little picture here is Vajrasattva. And if you want, you can try to feel that you are this Vajrasattva being. Beautiful, beautiful meditation. So the Buddha had a teaching. There's a sutta of a teaching about beings who tried, these yogis who tried to become different creatures. And in ancient India, becoming a cow or becoming a dog was felt by some schools, not many, but some schools, to be a path of liberation. If you totally let go into being a dog and you eat off the ground and you completely turn into a dog, you'll become liberated. So they went to the Buddha and they said, Buddha, we're practicing this path. What do you think about our practice? If we fully become a dog or a cow, do you think that we'll become enlightened? And I remember, if you read it very carefully, he tries to kind of skirt around the question and kind of go, not really going to answer this. And then eventually he does, because they asked him a number of times. He says, if you meditate on being a dog, you will become a dog, but you won't become enlightened. So really that's the answer to your question. So you don't want to be a house. Now, if you're practicing dream yoga, or what's called dream chokes, actually, really dream chokes, the dharma of dreams, waking dreams and sleeping dreams, especially in the completion stage of dreams, then there would be a legitimate place to see if you could try, while in dreaming, to become a house. But in fact, in the Vajrayana view, you would try to become a mandala palace, not just a house. But it's not bad. If you transform consciously into a house, or you consciously transform into a chair, or into other animals, that's pretty good. But it's not a means of liberation. It's a pretty cool lucid dreaming trick. But to put the seeds of Buddhahood means you need to put the causal things that actually lead to Buddhahood, which is the form, the speech, and the mind of awakeness. Making sense? So,
yes.
when you go into the size of the room, the size of the room is not the room, it's just simply a delimited size. You could easily say the body will now become 2 meters. So maybe that's where the confusion is. It's not the size of the room that matters. It's simply a delimited or a pre-programmed dimension that you open up to, not the house. But it's actually quite convenient, and a good way to do it is to open up the space of the dimensions of the room you're in. It's much easier than just saying 3 meters or 2 meters or 6 meters. That's all.
Yeah. And I was going to ask, does the shape, does it really matter? Is it still my body, because I'm doing the one that's my body, so the shape of my body would expand and become larger?
That's right. So it's whatever map of the body that you happen to have or concept at that time, that will expand. You may find that your head's huge. You may find that your feet are enormous. You may find that your upper torso is really where the focus is. It doesn't really matter. It really, really doesn't matter. Yeah. Remember the key points. As long as you're moving towards experiences of spaciousness, hollowness in a positive way, a feeling of openness, a feeling of kindness, a feeling of unobstructedness, all these kinds of things. So one of the meanings of hollow body, it's not just a spacious body, but from the Dzogchen point of view and Mahamudra point of view, it's a body, listen to it carefully. Lu, as a conditioned body, feels less obstructive. Ku, as an enlightened body, it's Tibetan for ku, Tibetan for body, but enlightened body is total unobstruction. There's nothing in the way. This is really important. You want to come to that experience. You want to come to that experience again and again and again and rest in that experience where there is no obstruction in your mind and your body. Certainly when you have an experience where you really feel you can actually walk through a wall, maybe you can't yet, or you can place your hand through a wall, or things get very, very transparent and beings become very transparent, This should be leading towards non-obstruction, which means your speech will also change. Non-obstructive speech, non-obstructive mind. Yeah. Good. Any others? So you know you were working on the pagoda today. The pagoda is actually the construct, the outer construct of the 37 factors of awakening. It's actually, as the great founder of the Drikung Kagyu tradition, 800 and some odd years ago, said, an awakened being is the 37 factors of enlightenment. So bringing all the 37 factors of enlightenment, which is what a pagoda or stupa represents, is bringing together all the elements, plus bodhicitta, great bodhicitta, bringing all the elements together of a greatly enlightened being. So when you work on a pagoda, you should really have the thought that you're working on a nirmanakaya, body of a fully awakened manifestation. Even though it's made of, well, it's got a little bit of epoxy resin now, and it's made of brick and mortar and all those things, but it actually has relics of arahats and awakened beings and great saints and all kinds. Actually, inside that pagoda, I happen to know, is beautiful sculptures and jewels. I saw them go in as part of that. Jewels and gems and sculptures and all kinds of things are inside that pagoda. And when you're working on it, it's not just a piece of concrete, but really it is the experience of the crystal pagoda, the actual heart of enlightenment. And when the 37 factors of enlightenment come together with bodhicitta, then we're talking about the bodhisattva experiences. So this is really precious. The monuments, actually, we're working on them, are profound meditations, including the meditation of the stupa or the meditation of the pagoda or the dagoba. It's a profound meditation. And it's one of the great signs, too, of one of the great nimittas of awakening. Any other questions about practice? Yes.
So, I have a couple questions. The first one was how to navigate when you're meditating with your eyes open, because the mind still grasps to the body and identifies with the body.
Mm.
And the other question was when one's lying down, is below still the earth or is it out?
Don't know. Whatever works.
Okay.
Whatever works. It's fine. Okay. You have to really, you know, some people, they complain, oh, I got the Yidam upside down on my head. What am I going to do? Nothing. It's fine. The Yidam's over here. I can't always bring it over here. That's okay. Maybe that's okay over here. The Yidam's sometimes below. It's way down there. It's supposed to be above my head. That's okay. It'll change. Don't worry it. Don't worry. What are the key things you're looking for? No matter what happens, no matter what your body's like, it could be 20 billion kilometers across and a big square, a cube, or a rectangle, or a big giant. You got to watch more. Got to watch more Star Trek, Next Generation. I mean, really. You know, stretched out body. You know, this thick, but a million miles across, and it's people can transport. It doesn't really matter as long as you're feeling what. What did I say before? The qualities, no matter what shape, what form you take, whether you're upside down, you're turned upside down, you're lying down, you're hanging up, doesn't matter. What are the qualities? Spacious, vivid, clear, open, hollowed out in a really beautiful way, and feeling a love, feeling a real kindness inside. Doesn't really matter. Because all those things are going to happen anyways. You're going to get turned upside down, you'll have your head cut off, you'll lose your arms, you'll shake, you'll rock, you'll roll, all kinds of stuff. I've known people who've all of a sudden discovered that they're actually standing on the moon. Completely vividly. Just suddenly on the moon. Or on the other side of the planet. Or way inside the planet. Or way up in space. Anybody have that? Just shot way up in space? Yeah. Looking down? Doesn't really matter then. So just be easeful about it. And having your eyes open is actually in some ways a bit more difficult, but actually in the long term is better for Yidam practice if your eyes are open. Okay, and it's easy to get kind of spaced out with your eyes shut. So remind me, and sometime we'll do some exercises with the eyes, which are really cool exercises, or I wouldn't call them explorations, where we're going to stretch our cognition using our eyeballs in all different directions, way behind, through the skull, way up above, way below, and then you'll see the hollow body gets easier. Okay? Yeah. And that's because partly, when you do a lot of meditation, you're going to see that your eyes are actually quite rigid. Your eyeballs get very, very rigid. They don't move around their sockets very well. And they normally, when we, if you say, where are you? Where is your awareness? Most people will say somewhere back in here. Yeah? You feel you're somewhere. And that's because of all the reading, partly due to a lot of reading, and also where the optic nerves cross. But if you start rotating and moving your eyes and getting your eyes really loosened up, you will see that you can start to feel with your eyes way more than this solid feeling of this is what I see. Whatever I see is out there. any others. That'd be a good thing to do. Some good, really good eye exercises. Any other questions? All clear? Yes.
As I was practicing, I was sort of caught up in this interesting thought process where I was hollowing out the four cardinal directions. As soon as I got to one side, I felt that my other side wasn't hollow anymore. So then I'm thinking, oh no, I've got to go back, I've got to make this side hollow, and then before you know it, I'm thinking about it, and it feels very unnatural. Now, it could just be because it's a brand new practice, but I guess my question is there a way of thinking about it that makes it more workable and fluid?
Yeah, just keep practicing and find it. That's just standard. Standard early practice. Oh, this is tough because the concepts are tough. Remember I introduced all this teaching as the only thing really, normally the teaching says of Dharma, the thing in the way is ignorance. Yeah? The root is ignorance. That's true. From a Dzogchen point of view and from Mahamudra point of view, it really comes down to conceptual ignorance. So what we deal with all the time are not difficulties, really, but are conceptual walls that we bump up again and we discover, look at that wall. Didn't even know you had that wall. So it's a matter of practicing. Gently, you keep practicing until it falls away. And half the time, you don't even know it fell away. It's just very natural. So yes, unnatural. Has anybody ever done practices like Chenrezig where it's unnatural? First time picking up a guitar? First week of lessons, maybe? Same thing. Awkward, uncomfortable, foreign, doesn't feel right. Remember, this is, you all came to a Dzogchen retreat. This is completion stage practice of Dzogchen. Hollow body. Spacious, luminous body. Eventually the body like a bindu, like a sphere of light, a rainbow light. In a dimensionless form. So we want to start somewhere. Yeah. Good. Day two. It's okay. Day two. Yeah, great. Any others? Okay. For some of you, got two different handouts tonight. Lots in them. I'm going to start with one a little bit, and then tomorrow come back to the other one, or maybe even a little bit of the other one. But I want to start with the one called the five pranas, according to the Buddhist tantric tradition, because this is very much about inner yoga. Perhaps it's possible to open up those windows a little bit. I'm going to also make a statement, which I'll explain over time, soon, and more often. I'm going to make a statement, you might want to write it down. It may not be quite understandable at the moment just to all of you, but I'm going to come back to it again and again. The greater your interoceptive sensation experience is, the faster your hollow body will come about. So I'm going to make that. The greater your ability to sense clearly, cleanly and clearly, the sensations coming through from the inside of your body, let alone the outside, will lead to a quicker hollow body experiences, but will also lead to quicker stability of tranquility. Okay? So one way we can do this, which is quite modern, and only discovered about, I think, 10 years ago, but I like it, and we use it a lot. We use it it's used now therapeutically, as well as meditatively, it's beautiful, is see if you can feel your heartbeats just by sitting or standing or lying down, is be able to feel your heartbeats very clearly. And not because you're thinking about your heartbeat, you're actually feeling your body move or pick up the sensation of your heartbeat, and then count that and check that against your pulse. Do you all know how to take your pulse? Yeah? Find your pulse, take your pulse, measure your pulse, and check that against your interoceptive sensation. It's very important. If you can't do it well, then keep working on it, please. Try to really pick up the feeling of the beat of the heart and the movements, the subtle movements of the heart. It does not be loud, it does not be dramatic, but it can be very, very gentle, and really work on making sure that you can pick up that interoceptive sensation, let alone pains, gurgles, movements of gas, and other kinds of sensations in your guts. It's very important. The discovery that the degree of heightened interoceptive ability and awareness is connected with depression and anxiety, and other kinds of perhaps illnesses or disorders, is a very important discovery. And it's when the Buddha talks in the fourth, when the Buddha talks about the four foundations of mindfulness in the first tetrad, the third line, the third of the first tetrad, which is breathing in the whole body of breath. That means the whole body of interoceptive, whole body, sensation body. The greater that you can have a clear sensation body is a faster route to hollow body, in fact, because you'll feel absolutely settled, lucid, and relaxed. And then the next stage, which is the second tetrad, is your body's going to fall away. You won't have a body. Won't have much of a body, believe me. When you start entering the jhanas, there's not much of a body, unless you're doing certain body meditations. So can you feel your legs? Can you feel your bum? So when you sit down to meditate or you stand, really make sure that you can feel your feet touching the ground, you can feel your bum, you can feel your seat. You want to get sensorily grounded before you sit and go into some space of meditation. You really want to have excellent sensory contact. It's illusory, but that's fine. Don't mind. Utterly, totally illusory, but that's okay. Don't be concerned with that. Yeah? Hence, the emphasis on making sure that everybody who's practicing has some sort of practice such, and quite good at it. Qigong, Hatha Yoga, Feldenkrais, that doesn't matter, Tai Chi, whatever leads you to a place where you stretch the nadis, you stretch the channels, you circulate the pranas or the ki, and you actually, after 20, 30 minutes, you feel really good. You see? Now you're meditating. That's important. Why are you feeling good? Because the pranas are circulating, the breath is circulating and causing sensation, awareness sensation, better than it was before. That's right. When you feel your whole body alive and full of sensation, you feel great. If you don't, then you may be feeling racked with pain. You may have a highly inflammatory body, or you may have such an inflamed mind that you feel awful. But for most people, I think it's safe to say that when you feel your whole body come alive, you feel really good. That's called metta. You feel great. Yeah? And you feel great towards other beings. So I'm going to make another statement, which is connected. All experience, it's normally said that all meditative experience or all mind experience rides on the breath. It's a very old yogic experience, a very old yogic statement from Patanjali Yoga, right? Whatever the mind is doing, the breath is doing. It's just straight law until we come to kind of transcendent awareness. So if you want to know what your mind is doing, it's the energies that the mind is riding. It's like a horse rider and a horse. Yeah? So the horse is the prana, the rider is the ego, it's kind of the thinking mind, and it's being ridden around on top of the horse. Everybody's going, well, how do I still my thoughts? What do I think about? What do I reconceptualize? What antidote do I use? What do I do? Actually, the reason the thoughts are going like this, or settled, absolutely settled and serene, is because of the way the pranas are circulating. And that's because the pranas are karmic. They carry our karmic volition. So therefore, you have a handout about the five pranas. And so, I want you to begin as a practitioner of Vajrayana to consider that whatever your mind is doing, for instance, as Nick was saying, it doesn't feel right over here, or it doesn't, not able to open that. That's entirely due with the circulation of pranas. So I can answer you and I can just say, it's this prana or that prana. That wouldn't necessarily be fair until you get to know them. So these five pranas in the Indian tradition, as they move and circulate, and depending on their force of circulation, one has different kinds of experiences. As a matter of fact, one can say quite reasonably that all day long, every single experience, angry, irritated, greedy, wanting, uncomfortable, happy as can be, spaced out, alive, comfortable, fiery, spread all over the place, whatever, watery, whatever experience you're having, it's simply the movement of the pranas. This is from the inner yoga tradition and the inner yoga practices of the completion stage, which form the center of all the practices we do in Vajrayana. It's worth knowing. So not only do we want to settle the breath, but we want to purify the breath. Because when the breath runs through the channels, it's no different than that black pipe over there, which is, I believe, is that the pipe coming from the wood stove? Okay. And if the staff here, whoever's stoking the stove, put in wet, damp softwoods, what's going to happen to the stove? It's going to get full of creosote. And it could be that one day that it's got such a creosote buildup that there's a chimney fire. If you've ever seen a chimney fire, which I've had the unpleasure to see, because I actually had to run in my cabin, so flee. That was a beaver dam cabin. When the beaver dam cabin had a wood stove in it, and the whole stove became cherry red and shaking like that. Well, the only thing you do is you close the door and you run. Okay? So the same thing happens to us. The karmic conceptual patterns get laid in the channels, not just in your brain. They're in your veins. They're in your subtle energy body. And they're deep. All 84,000 of them. Of which there's only really three. Of which there's only one. So we're lucky. We don't have to go after all 84,000. Believe me, it's a big job. We usually only go after three. But those 84,000 kalesas or habit patterns are laid right through our being. And it's fantastic to see in the last couple years in brain science, where brain science is now moving and mapping the rest of the organs connected with the brain. It's fantastic change from brain-centered to brain, whole body, organ communicating. Fantastic. So whatever you feel right now is not you. It's the five pranas, or the five dhatus, the five elements. This goes way back to an ancient meditation, the Theravadan tradition, which is called the four element meditation. You meditate on the four elements until you vanish, and all you experience everywhere is the four dhatus moving, just changing. It's beautiful meditation. It's fantastic. Everybody following along so far? So imagine if the staff here, whoever stokes the fire, keeps putting in softwood, let's say out of ignorance, okay? Out of moha. They said to put the hardwood in, but I can't tell the difference, and I it's easier to put the softwood in. So we stoke the stove with softwood. How come a chimney fire started? Well, if you stoke anger or you stoke frustration, you stroke greed, and that's your habit pattern, greed, hatred, delusion, all the other kalesas, then the whole being gets filled. Like stuffed pipes with those habit patterns. Okay, we usually think of it as the brain. It's actually all through our being. You'll feel that. Next time you have anxiety, go hit yourself on the chest. Don't break a bone. Go hit yourself strong in the chest, and it might actually pop. It's happened many times. I've seen it, done it to people. It's, come here. Wow. Gone. It's in the body fabric. It's in the fine energy fabric. So when you breathe, it might feel like a full breath to you, but in fact, it's actually usually quite a stuck breath. Where's the breath getting stuck? Does it go to the feet? Does sensation go to the toes? Does sensation go to the nose? Does sensation go to the ears and the crown of the head? And does it warm your belly? And does it go to your chest? You see? Everybody following along? So whenever you take a breath, which doesn't mean like this, but can just be an ordinary, unconscious breath, all that chi, that ki, that fine energy is circulating around, but it doesn't go everywhere, and it gets blocked, and it gets stuck, and it circulates well here, and it doesn't get circulate well here. Whatever that pattern is how you feel. So you could ask me any kind of question, I'll just say to you, earth dhatu, fire dhatu, imbalance, strong wind, weak wind, just like Jack would do. You could do that with your clients, right? And they wouldn't have a clue what you're talking about. You just say, oh, wind deficient. Thanks. Thanks for that. And, right? That's because that's what you're determining. Same thing in Chinese medicine, right? Same thing. So when we come to the inner yogas of the a Buddhist tradition, we want to be able to free and clear the channels because they're holding the deepest karmic material. And if we don't, our insight practice, our tranquility practice, may be superficial practice, surface practice, but it's not actually getting really deep. That means when something comes along, it's not very solid. It gets blown away. So the three things that we really need to go after out of 84,000 is all the kinds of greed states, wanting, needing, lusting after, all the angry, irritable, difficult, conflicted states, all the way to full rage. And of course, the key, which causes everything, which is not knowing the nature of this experience. It causes frustration. It causes clinging, causes attachment. So far, so good? Okay. So the way the Buddha approached this in the Theravadan tradition, not necessarily in the Tantra traditions. According to the Tantra traditions, the Buddha was also teaching Tantra at the time. And I actually do believe that. I think that's quite logical, since he practiced all those yogas and it was very mainstream at that time, he certainly would have learned all that, for sure. He was a great practitioner of yoga, and a great practitioner of inner yoga. But it was only in Gampopa's time, 1,000 years ago, that inner yoga and Mahamudra was ever uttered publicly. The entire time before that, it was utterly secret. No one uttered a word about it. you might even see your teacher and never be introduced to the inner yogas like I'm introducing for maybe 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years, or maybe never. That's the fact. Okay. So you may be saying to yourself now, so how do I purify the pranas? How do I purify the karma material? We have to get the breath to move. We have to get it to circulate. So when you're saying, when you say, my mind is busy, your pranas are busy. They're blocked somewhere. When the pranas move, they circulate, and they dissolve away inside the channels, especially the central channel, you're thought-free. You'll have thought-free experience. So there's many things to do. Does everybody in the room, I know most of you do, but does everybody in the room have a practice such as Hatha Yoga, such as Qigong, Tai Chi, Feldenkrais, and so on, that you can rely upon to make your channels, your nadis more subtle and flowing? Does everybody have that? Does anybody not have that? That's great. Good. So one way to practice the hollow body, which I would advise, and I have done, is between let's say 3 or 4 sessions, is to take a pause and to do 20 minutes or a half an hour of whatever practice you know that works to bring about an evenness of breath in the two nostrils. There's no way around this. When your breath is even in both your nostrils, when you take a breath, and they're both supplely even, you will see that when you go like this, your mind is relatively still. You will feel a feeling of openness, you'll feel a feeling of settledness, and you really will have a concentrated mind. When one is blocked or another, generally speaking, unless you really know your mind's nature, then it doesn't really matter. Who cares? But until that point, there will be a predominance of greed states, predominance of irritated states and angry states, and certainly a predominance of ignoring or dullness or even utter stupidity. It is to do with the breath. Okay? So check it right now. I'm going to go stage by stage. If you take your finger, right? Take your finger. You can use your index or you can use your middle finger. Sometimes we use a ring finger. And you place it on your nose. Just check to see if the flow of breath, you don't have to do a strong breath, just very even. Let your belly drop. And see if it runs through evenly. Okay? If it isn't, then it's not balanced. It's worth balancing it. You may find eventually that when you practice the inner yogas, or Yidam yoga, and so on, and even meditations of tranquility moving towards Mahamudra, of practice without support, that it's absolutely ideal to have the breath flowing evenly in the nostrils. If it isn't, don't worry it. Practice anyways. Otherwise, you won't, may not practice. The breath flows evenly naturally for most people at about 6 times in the day. Find out when those 6 periods are. It can be short, it can be long. All right? There are 6 ideal times for you in a day, which is a long day, to practice, which are ideal for you but may not be exactly the same for anybody else. Most of you, I think, in the room know what your ideal, settled, relaxed, bright times are. Is that right? Can you name them? Can you kind of go, yep, from this time to this time, this time to this time, this time to this time? And how about sleepy ones? Oh, man, every day it's like at 11:03 in the morning, right, a.m., it's, may as well just fall over. You have that? Anybody have that? 2:05 in the afternoon? clock it, especially if you're doing a really good long retreat, yeah? Click, click, click. You go, uh-oh, it's 9:30 in the morning. Excuse me. Clunk. And you come out of it, okay? Sloth and torpor. This is the movement of the pranas. Movement of the pranas, okay? If you do very deep retreat work, let's say a dark retreat, you can actually feel the circulation of the pranas going up and down through your body and so on. So this is how subtle the experience, the interoceptive experience can be. Now, you may say, well, then I should meditate when my breath is not even. No, you meditate. Otherwise, you may find you don't meditate at all the day. All you're doing is fiddling. Okay? You're just fiddling around. I'm going to get it. Okay, but there's things you can do. And if you can't do these and they don't work, you meditate anyways. It doesn't matter. But one thing you can do is you can lie on your side, and for the side that is blocked, make sure that's the upper side, okay? So you can go like this, lie on your side. Place your finger right here, this little spot, this little spot, hollow indentation here. Just gently put your finger into the hollow indentation, like this. And let it pop open. If that doesn't work, take a very cold shower. If that doesn't work, there's all kinds of methods. I'm going to go through methods. I'm not going to spend the whole night doing that. One very simple method, your channels are relatively well purified. All you need to do is just do this. Just put your finger up in that hollow and breathe a bit until it feels relatively balanced. The other method, of course, is just enter into the continuum. Identify or recollect the continuum of awareness, and usually it's quite balanced. All right. Prana is not the problem. Clinging's the problem. Conceptual clinging's the problem. As soon as you change the concept, the pranas change. How can we prove that? I practice as a scientist too, you know. My hobby. Everybody winks at me. My hobby. As a scientist, how would we test that experimentally? How would we actually do a simple test of change of clinging, of concept, changes the pranas within a fraction of a second? What would be a simple test that most people engage in but don't engage? I'll give a clue. Don't engage during the age of COVID. And people do it all the time to change their pranas. All the time. One of the fastest ways to change prana flow.
Hugging.
Hugging. You bet. Go get a hug and the pranas change. Just like that. Fraction of a second. How else? Handshake. How else? Looking. How else? We're changing it. We're manipulating our pranas all the time. Cup of coffee, cup of tea, hot water, warm water, cold water, walk into a room, get up, move around, shake, whatever it is. Yeah? Go drive in a car. Let's go for a drive in a car. Change pranas. What else do we do? What other things do we do to change pranas? Netflix. What else? A good novel. A bad novel. A lousy novel. A Dharma text. Zoom. No Zoom. Go for a walk. Go for a kayak ride. You following? All those things change our conceptual outlook, which are manipulating our pranas. Painting. Working on a pagoda. Fixing a temple. Renovating a temple will deeply change many beings' pranic flows. Get the idea? We're manipulators, and we manipulate all day our pranas. We manipulate each other. I'm manipulating you right now. You're trying to manipulate me. So I'm just hoping I'm a little stronger. That's all. Or actually really don't care. Can you feel it? All day long. Food. Food number one. Right? Food. Food changes prana. That's why so many health practitioners, right? Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic, change your food, change your diet. Yeah? You can all feel it? To the point, in theory, but possibly actuality, that if you put food on your mouth for about 3 seconds, you should feel what it's doing to your body. It might be wrong, but you can feel what it's doing to your body. Any questions so far? It's interesting teaching to people who are wearing masks, banditos, trying to read the body language. You have to have enough wrinkle. I have to sort of see the eyes and go, because normally I do that. I for years now I've been teaching just looking at body language, and that's how I teach. It's kind of new. It's kind of a new experience. Very quiet. The entire basis of Buddhist tantric practice, the basis of Buddhist tantric yoga, is to bring the winds, purified winds, into the central channel, the avaduti, which runs from the crown of the head. Actually, it runs from here, from just above the bridge of the nose, actually kind of thickens and opens here at the crown, straight down. Unless there's a lack of purification, then it's bent and all over the place. But when it's purified, it runs straight down in front of the spine, where the spine usually is, somewhere about 2 centimeters. All right, and it runs down 4 finger widths below the navel, and then it continues on down into the genital area. So this avaduti, when it's in its natural condition, is utterly pure, but it's normally filled like a stovepipe with all kinds of conditioning. Yeah, so it has to be purified. It's actually already pure, like all the channels, but it needs to get unbound from karmic winds. So you can see in the text here, the avaduti is known in the Buddhist tantric tradition as the void space or the empty space element, the dhatu, or the cognizant wisdom element. So you know that the pranas, the winds, karmic winds, have entered the central channel by 3 distinctive signs. The beginning 3 signs. The mind feels utterly blissful, not necessarily ecstatic, just utterly really good, and it can go ecstatic, really ecstatic, and the mind will feel very, very transparently clear and luminous, space and light. And the defining hallmark, although not how do I say that in English? Okay. The 3 ideal signs of energy entering the central channel is the dropping away completely of all thoughts. When the thoughts vanish, like an air pocket, and the mind feels blissful and subtle, clear and lucid, even for a second, the energies have begun to enter the central channel, If they dwell and remain and dissolve further, then we get 10 signs, okay? 10 definitive signs. So all practices that you're doing of tranquility, you're actually trying to balance those 3. That's ideally what you want, is a balance. Sometimes we have more bliss. Sometimes we have more lucidity and clarity and spaciousness, hollow body, space, openness, light. But ideally, for really good, for Dzogchen, for Mahamudra, for practices without support, is we would like the pranas dissolve in the central channel even a little bit, and we'll have those three signs. No thought, space-like mind, openness, feeling of openness, and boy, do you feel good. It's just great. Lightness of being. You can have no thoughts, but you can have a dull mind. You can have no thought, but you have a frozen, turgid mind. Okay? We want all three. So when they begin to happen, we get three that are unbalanced. We get some bliss, but we don't have no thoughts. We have bliss, but we have a dull mind. We have bliss, but we don't feel spacious. We have bliss, but we don't feel any light at all. So bit by bit by bit, by practice, hours and hours of practice, day after day, the pranas and purification of through prayers, through preliminary liberating instructions and so on, Vajrasattva, mandala offering, guru yoga, taking refuge, bodhicitta, over and over again, slowly and subtly, we unkink those channels. And if you practice, you'll have more and more experiences of what? As people often tell me. Just open. Is that right? What was that? Oh. You've all had that, yes? Have you all had that? If the energies really enter the central channel and they abide in the central channel, then the thoughts will sink like the setting of the sun. They will just go. They'll really go.
The dissolution in the central channel?
Yes, it is. Yeah. But it's not necessarily conjoined with wisdom. Mm-hmm. So there's always been a question about that. It's really excellent balance, the two side channels. But unless it's conjoined with wisdom practice, it's not necessarily. So it's the beginning of the opening of the central channel, but it's not necessarily the dissolving the pranas in the central mm-hmm. channel. So when we have luminous emptiness compassion experiences, now we're talking central channel. Yeah. Yeah. It's a debatable point. I would put my two cents in there, but it's not particularly talked about. And also there is experiences of the spine, the energy going up the spine, which is a different channel, which will bring about bliss, clarity, and non-distinction. So you have two, you have different channels. Yeah. You can go a very long way in tranquility meditation by bringing about purification of the two side channels, but not just the central channel. To actually have a true balance and entering of the central channel is the really the space-like vanishing and settling of the mind with a non-clinging experience as opposed to a non-thought experience. So there's a difference. There's non-thought and non-clinging to concepts without thought. There's a very wakeful non-thought, and there's non-thought, which is the stopping or the blocking or the coming to rest of thoughts, okay? So as Namjoon Rinpoche would often say, not only do we need to calm the mind, but we need to wake up the mind. Right? We need to bring out the luminous, clear, compassionate nature that's inherent in the mind. So I want to just go through for a few minutes on page 1, are these numbered? Yes, they're numbered at the top. on the first page. On page one, you will see from the point of view of Tibetan medicine as found in the Tibetan tantras, which came from India, you will see the five primary pranas. And actually, what I would like you to do is read these and become familiar with them and see if you can. This has been practiced, studied, well documented by great yogis and yoginis for over 2,000 years. So this is not something that someone just wrote down, or Lama Mark wrote down, or Shaman Khandral wrote down, but this is the distillation of thousands of years of great practitioners. So number one is called the upward prana, the upgoing prana. And it's associated with what's called the earth dhatu, the earth quality. I'm a bit loath to use the word element. It's not quite right. The earth quality. Often we see yellow or gold colors. If we see a light or a nimitta or a sign, it's often yellow or gold, or the Adam will be, or the deity will be gold or yellow. We may see gold rings. We might get married. No, I'm just kidding. We may run off to the jeweler and melt some gold, these kinds of things. But if you see a field of gold, there's a real good sign. If you see a beautiful field of gold, your clothing suddenly turns gold, and your body turns gold, and the room turns golden, or you feel that you're floating on a field of gold light, these are kinds of things. This is a real clear sign of the strong earth dhatu. It's a controlling or shaping factor for the activation of the senses. If you have weak earth dhatu, your senses will be weak, including thoughts and cognitive memory, and diligence and the ability to carry out activities. So sign, weak sensing, feeling like you can't see very well or hear very well, and of course that happens with old age, is these pranas weaken. And it's very vital. You might think of the earth dhatu as down somewhere in the genitals or in the feet, but the earth dhatu is vital to good brain function. It's very much to do with the expansion element, the expansion quality. Page two. So from the throat to the crown is very much to do with the movement of the earth dhatu in the Buddhist tantras. So simply doing this, very gently, holding a gentle vase breath without strain, with a single breath and letting it out very slowly, is a beautiful way to balance the earth dhatu and balance the upgoing prana, the first prana. So I'm just showing you these very, very simple. Do not do it fast. We don't want you heading towards the chiropractor. We don't want you, and probably you have to do it very gently. A gentle, gentle breath into your belly. Let it sit. Just watch. Let it sit. Let the belly fall. You can have your hands like this. It's quite good. So the chest is open. The thumb, if you want to do it really quite tight, the thumb is sitting here at the base of the ring finger like that. Hands like this. Or behind your knees, but you want to make sure that the chest is open like a vulture. Vulture. So watch this. Very beautiful. You just must do it gently. If you don't do it gently, you stir up and disturb the pranas. So you want to know how to do it exquisitely. Let the belly fall. Rotating to the left. clockwise. Slowly letting the breath out through the nostrils. And feel the body and mind and see if it's brighter, more settled, more alert. That's all. That's all you're looking for. Okay? Physical feeling. Mental, physical sensation. Any questions? So, if you can hold it comfortably for 3 rotations, anti-clockwise, clockwise, fine. If you can hold it for 10, fine. But don't start doing this, I'm going to do it for 20. I'm going to hold my breath for 3 minutes and I'm going to blow my brain. Don't do that. All you'll do is just make yourself feel awful and disturb your physiology. Okay? I would recommend everybody does that. Okay? And I suspect that there's all kinds of methods like that taught. Yes, in Hatha Yoga? Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Bandhas? Yeah. Sure. Okay. That's an easy one. Okay. Life force prana. And some of these I'm going to show you tomorrow because they're just going to, we just don't have enough time to go through them. Is everybody clear on that? Don't overdo it. Everything is gentle. The vase breath is gentle. The holding is gentle. How do you know? The breath will come out of your nose clearly, evenly and slowly, and there's no strain. I'll repeat it again. Don't strain or you'll get strain. It's the worst thing you can do. And as over time, slowly, gradually extend the breath holding to 3 rotations, 5 rotations, 6 rotations, 10 rotations, fine. But don't go past what's important. What's more important than how long you can do it?
Quality.
Again, quality. If you're getting excellent quality and you're going, this is really good. I mean, this is stable, thought-free awakeness after 3 rotations. Congratulations. Why are you going to go on and hold your breath for, you know, as Jisun Sumgon said, much better is the vase with no breath than the vase with breath. Much higher attainment to have the vase where you're not doing anything. It's called knowing the mind's nature. The prana is just settled. So quality over quantity. There's another note here about number one, peacefulness. The dissolving of pride. See if that's true. When you practice this, do you get a feeling like your pride or your self-referencing or your need to be bolstered doesn't fall away? It's connected with the siddhi, the relative siddhi of the wish-granting tree. That is, it's a particular siddhi that whatever you put your mind on and you wish for, it comes. That's the relative siddhi. The ultimate siddhi is if you put your mind on liberation, it comes, and if you put your mind on liberation for other beings, it comes. That's the nature of the wish-granting tree. Connected with the vocal tissues, speaking, singing, laughing, and crying. Number 2, the life force prana. Now, the life force prana is associated very much with the heart, and it's connected with space quality. Usually blue is the light. We often see blue associated with the heart center and the heart. If it's weak, fragility of the heart energies, and it can go, of course, to death. Associated with motor activities, associate a weak life force prana is associated with a weak mind, also anger and hatred. On the other hand, if strong, then one experiences vivid clarity and strength. Joy, no fear or anxiety, and it goes towards wisdom, true wisdom experience. And the heart is connected with the wish-granting jewel, a manifestation of one's wishes. All right. And I'm going to show these more tomorrow, but most of the exercises are done from here. right? So it's a vase breath from here, but you're stretching like a bow and arrow, like this, and you're rotating. You're making rotations with a vase breath. You can actually, let's just do a simple one tonight. Let's not do a complicated. Again, fingers here like this, curled in, like that. And we watch this. It's really great. This is so fast. Either drink a lot of beer or let your belly fall. I'd recommend the latter. Unless it's really good beer. Okay, so let the belly fall. Take a gentle vase breath in, no strain. And then rotations around the heart clockwise, like this. You can also do this for the navel as well, but just around the heart. And then, the other way, focus on the heart center. Okay? And I like to do one other, which I really enjoy, which is this. Up and down, like a circle. Like this, and like this. Okay? And a real good one is this. You want to see a real good one? Just don't break your ribs. And see how you feel. Try that.
Are you holding your breath?
And let your breath out. That's it. No broken ribs. Let your breath out and just see how it is. Anybody feel the difference? It's really quick. You don't have to do a lot. You can do it all sitting. Okay, so let's do it again. You can shorten this down to one rotation, one rotation, one rotation anti-clockwise, one rotation clockwise, one rotation up and down, one rotation the other way, and then going like this. That's it. And then let the breath out. It's to do with no strain. Don't strain. Don't push. That's all. You'll get much better results. Yes.
But what's a vase breath?
Ah, good. Vase is bringing breath sensation, pranas, although you don't breathe into your belly. If you do, I think you got to see a doctor. But when you hold a breath, you draw in the breath in through your nostrils with your mouth closed, and you draw it into your belly. Let your belly fall out. Let it just fall out. Let it open. Some of it's very rigid. If it's very rigid, it just takes time. Just work on having your belly open. Let it open. And let the breath, let the sensation sit in the pot. This is called a pot. Okay? Little pot like this. You will eventually, people felt this before? If you let the breath come into your belly, it will feel like a balloon being filled of lovely sensation. You know you're on the right track. Also, you put your hand here, it feels delightful and warm. Okay? And when you do that, you'll feel just glorious. All right? So, the vase breath, please don't overdo it. Do it very, as Tsongkhapa said, the art of Dumo is to practice the vase breath gently and carefully so you can extend it and hold the breath longer, but don't overstrain or you damage, you can create nervous disorders. All right, so there's a beautiful one. Everybody clear about that? Anti-clockwise rotations around the heart, even though it's around the belly, like this. Clockwise. Up and down, like a washing machine or something. Or some other washing machine, some other planet. Okay? And then like this. And how do you know it's really working? You feel like sitting for about 5 hours. He's just like, whoever wants to move from here. That's a good sign. Anybody ever had that? You know the feeling? Like, why would I go anywhere else? I'm just unmovable. Beautiful, spacious, unmovable experience. Okay, let's continue on. We have some more time. Fire prana. There's a little note I put in here. I've made these summaries from different texts, summarizing different texts, and also personal experience. Fire is often associated with how you really feel. It's the fire in your belly, the fire that has you going. It's associated with the fire element, which is calorific, hot, cold. Loss of fire leads to depression. I put a little note there that most of the serotonin receptors in the body are actually found in the belly. Low fire can lead to digestive problems and slow digestion. Lack of focus, can't take in ideas or food for... Can't take in ideas or grow to food. Grow food to grow? Something like that. Can't write. Can't focus, can't take in ideas or... sorry, is that digest food? No, it's food to grow. Let's just say food to go. You're on the go. I'm not sure where that came from. That's to do with the line above it. That's a little dyslexia going down below. You can't grow with food. You digest food. Connected with greed and generosity. So greed is the negative, generosity is the positive. A positive is to metabolize and digest food. And incorporation and digestion of all phenomena, ideas, concepts, not just food. So how fast you can get ideas and what you can do with ideas is very much to do with the fire prana and also the earth prana. Positive, you feel full of food at all levels. You feel filled. You feel delightfully filled with nutrient. Creativity. Vitality, bliss, joy, and bliss of awareness. Connected with the transformation center, four finger widths below the navel. All right, so how do you get at that? Same thing. Sit in a cross-legged posture or in a chair. It's harder to do in a chair, but you can do it in a chair. And same thing. But this time we're moving around the belly and our focus is four finger widths below the belly. We take a Vaz breath in, let it sit, feel the belly fill like a balloon going, open the gas valve. And just try three rotations, beautiful slow rotations, anti-clockwise around that point, the four finger widths below the navel, deep in the belly. Bring the belly in, like a bandha, bring the belly in towards the spine. Rotate out to the right. Let the belly open front. Holding the breath, making sure the head is held looking down. And then pause and three rotations clockwise. If you do it right, you feel like taking all your clothes off because you're bloody hot. Let the belly relax, let the breath go out, and then look up like this and feel the quality of mind and body. One of the signs likely is you're going to feel really warm. Number four, down-going prana, apana vayu, the water dhatu, usually associated with white, below the navel, somewhere between the navel and the base of the genitals, connected with the elimination of fluids and substances, even ideas, how well you can let go of ideas and concepts. So if you're stuck, like, I'm never going to be able to meditate. I'll never be able to attain liberation. I can't do this. What is that? Weak, down-going pranas. Or you can't get rid of an idea out of your head. Right? I must do this. I can't do this. I should do this. And you can't digest it. You can't let it go. Orgasm is associated with the down-going prana. Urination, defecation, erection, arousal, attachment and lust, bliss and sex, bliss and joy, connected with the experience of mahasukha, bliss, emptiness, ground and stable. Most people think of bliss in spiritual terms always up here. But actually, in the Buddhist tantras, not only do we need to bring energies and open up the crown, but we have to bring the energies all the way back down and fill the genitals. All the channels and all the chakras have to be opened, otherwise we have imbalances. So when we really come to extraordinary bliss emptiness, we're going to have the clearing, the purification of the sexual center, the secret center, and it will become grounded and stable. It's a different kind of bliss. Instead of it being a kind of like an orgasm bliss, it's more towards a pervasive bliss emptiness. Extraordinary. How do we do that? We need to get more on the ground. More like this. Very similar thing. This. And basically, a simple way of doing this instead of the full lotus is like this. Okay, so if I'm going, I've done this for a while. Can everybody see this? Anti-clockwise. You're like this. You hold your hands like this. You then rotate, you take a Vos breath, and you're rotating and feeling your sit bones and your whole lower musculature moving. And usually what I do is I cross like that for anti-clockwise. Clockwise. So you're rotating down there. That's where you want to feel it. Okay? You can also do it like this. You just want to feel it way down here. You want to feel it really in your pelvis. I found that many of these can actually be done standing. In fact, if you're very subtle about it, it's beautiful. You can also do these standing. Okay? I used to teach a lot of this at the Dharma Center. Until it was banned. I'm just kidding. People thought we're doing weird things. But this is really good. Is Vos breath, rotations like this, yeah, and then you can also do the same like this. I used to teach this a lot here. This is just something I never learned from anybody. This is something that I just kind of came upon doing retreats, and it's really great standing like this. Okay, and then like this. I also often do it like this. So there's different ways of doing it. And the head rotation is like this. Yeah, like this. Okay. pervasive prana. Green, associated with the green, the air dhatu, the air quality. Green, the last one, that will be the last for tonight. Green everywhere in the body, connected with the strength or weakness of communication, connectivity, sensation of prana, blood, lymph, nerves, endocrine function, connections, hormonal functions, dimension of extension, bigger and smaller. So both the earth dhatu, the earth quality, and also pervasive prana is connected to the exercises I gave out last night of growing big and growing small. Negative side is jealousy and wish to do harm, pervasion, or, oh, there's a typo there, pervasion or no pervasion of sensation, if you want to correct that. Pervasion or no pervasion of sensation. E.g., when the snow falls, does one experience a sensation through one's whole body or just as a visual? Do you know what I mean by that? So if this flower is taken, do you see the flower or do you feel, physically feel the flower moving? If the flower hits the floor, do you see it hit the floor or do you also feel the flower run through you as a full body of sensation? When someone moves their arm, do you feel it through your body or do you just see it? When you hear something, do you hear it or do you feel it run through your body? Same thing with mantras. We do the same thing with mantras. Is the mantra here, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, or is it running throughout the entire body of sensation and eventually the entire room, like it's bouncing off the walls and it's filling the room? So is it visual or do you feel it? Do you actually feel it as a sensation, not just here, but actually all through your body? So that's pervasive prana. And this is with any of the senses. Tasting, you know, when you have a meal and you say, or water? Do you know how difficult it is to taste water with discrimination? We once did that in Toronto, right? Was it 11 or 17 waters? I can't remember how many waters we bought. And we did water tastings in Toronto and see if we could actually note the taste of waters. And we found that, right, we came to some pretty good conclusions about water. But have you ever tried to describe water? It's pretty incredible. Okay, so when you taste water, are you tasting water visually? Taste, smell, touch, but is that water experience like a little kid running through you? Remember what that was like? I hope you had that. I don't know. Yes. Remember that? You taste food and you go, whoa. Remember what that like as a kid? Yeah. You just go like, ever do that? Yeah. Whoa. That's a body experience. You see it, you feel it, you go, whoa, I like that food. Oh, I hate that food. That smell, ugh. But it's not just like here. It's through your whole being. You really feel it. Yeah? Okay, pervasive prana. And the soul, same thing with love. So here we have, or feeling of love for someone. Is it cerebral? Yeah, I love you. Listen to the language. Yeah, I love you. I love all of you. I really love all of you a lot, actually. Or is it, I love you, you know? Do I love you? Do you feel it? Do you actually feel it through you? Warmth and joy. Positive signs, sharp mind, quick mind, pervasive feeling of openness, no limits, no boundaries, fading away of all time and space, referencing. So how do we do this? Well, I'm going to show you a real simple one. Lovely. You know, part of being in meditation retreat is beginning to feel not the mind of a baby, but sensations of being baby-like or kid-like, and the kind of giggles and the spontaneous laughter and protecting Okay. Ah, okay. Great. Thank you. Anybody still ever wake up spontaneously out of sleep just laughing their guts out over nothing at all? Or in retreat, you just laugh your guts out. There's nothing to do with anything at all. You're just on the floor, belly laughing your guts out. Yeah? And it's the silliest thing. Or you think of something, nobody else would ever find it funny. It's brilliant, but nobody else finds it funny. You're just laughing and laughing and laughing. Every time you think of it, that's amazing. That's so good. I should tell people that. But when you do, they go, you're an idiot. You're really an idiot. That's a good sign. That's a really good sign. I feel it's a good sign. All right. So how do you do this? Same thing. Like this. Vase breath. Gentle vase. Take the two hands, warm them. Very qigong-like. Okay? Warm them. Same, keep the breath. Hold the breath. And now, massage. Light. This is not deep tissue massage. Back, sides, belly, down the legs, inner legs, right down the feet. Then what? Hands come back. Open. How's that feel? Physically, how's that feel? How's that mentally feel? And do that 3 times, or 4 times, or 5 times. By the way, I'm going to warn you, if you overdo these practices, just like Feldenkrais and yoga and Qigong, you overdo it, you sink the energies. You have to have a discriminating feel when it's right and when to stop, just like meditation. There's 2 ways you can go to meditation, by time or by quality. Know when to take the break, when it's at its peak, and break it off. But once you reach that time, don't start going backwards. That's really not good. But same thing, if you're practicing yoga or qigong and you feel this is really good, settled, open, good feeling, what do? Good, fine, done. Yeah, good. All right. I think that's lots for tonight. You can read the rest. These are really notes I've collected from classic, wonderful, authoritative places in the Buddhist Tantras, mostly from Jaman Kontrol, who's a great master. And you can read through those and you'll see this is very much connected to what's called luminous Mahamudra and luminous Dzogchen. And the other handout, you can read through it and we will go through that tomorrow night. And we'll come back to the text, the Bodhicitta Vivarana, tomorrow morning. The other handout is absolutely essential for everybody. Most of you have had teaching on it before, but there's some that you may never have had teaching on, is the summary on the last page, all right? Which we'll use last 4 and 5, which we'll use for this 3 weeks of teaching. So I think that is plenty tonight. The 5 pranas that I've extracted are fairly central to most of the Buddhist tantras. There are exceptions, especially when you get to the Kala Chakra. So be prepared that if you read a text, depending on who translated it and when it was from, it will have some variations on here. That's just the nature of the history of Buddhist tantra, especially when we come to the Kala Chakra, which is the most magnificent description of the inner energies. It's extremely complex, all right? So I warn you, what I've done here is extracted the mainstream, normal way in which described from what's called the Mother Tantras, which is bliss emptiness, and some of the other tantras such as Yamantaka, Kala Chakra, a little bit changes in Gwasamaja, but mostly in Demchog, Vajrogini, mother line tantras. This is fairly classic. Rechen Rezi Yabyom, if any of you are blessed to attend the retreat with Lama Sonam. This is pretty mainstream to what he will probably teach. Okay, if you have any quick questions, if not, happy to close it there. So what am I emphasizing? Practice. Do these exercises lots. Do not overstrain, but get used to doing them and do them between your hollow body practice. And I guarantee, I'll put the money down, I will guarantee that your hollow body practice is going to go 100% faster and better. Actually, all meditation will go better. That's just the way it will be, is if you learn to do these types of practices and combine them with a yoga or whatever you do, you'll see by balancing the pranas, when you go to sit or stand in meditation, you're really going to have a stable, a beautiful mind. So it's lovely. And if you're not, then there's purification work to do. That's all. And merit building. So, yeah, all good? Yeah, see? Great. Well, let's have a beautiful dedication, aspiration for all beings. And if you don't know the meaning of Tibetan, as probably many of you don't know in the room the meaning of Tibetan words, then use it as mantra yoga. Let the sound and the speaking of the sounds run through your being and through the room and shake loose whatever's stuck. It's beautiful. Just relax into it and just let it unbind you.
Namo Bhagavan Subhatam, the ten directions and the three times,
Guru Ridham and the three jewels, all of the pictures of many greater dust of the field, all of you lizards, listen and pay heed to us. From now on, as much virtue as the virtuous actions performed by man and others, body, speech, and mind equals with this, accumulated throughout the three times, and stains virtue existing within you, is dedicated to gather in the expanse of awakening. Having arrived at the state of knowledge of the victors of their children, may the state of knowledge of the subtitles be totally perfected. The great stage is pervaded by the demonstration of the wheel of knowledge of liberation. May the holders of the stages have perfected their activities, carry happiness to the world and dharma to all my created beings. And may yogins be satisfied with the glory of the ten virtues. Having purified all sufferings of samsara and six causes, may we quickly attain the omniscience of complete Buddhahood. Depending on the force of the accumulated roots of virtue arising from amazing connections of cause and conditions, may the sentient beings of the three times who exist in samsara, having actualized the ultimate knowledge of their own awareness, perfecting all stages of primordial wisdom through the conduct of Samanta Vajra Bodhisattva, abide in the supreme space free from obscurations. Without objectifying the meaningful benefit of others, according to the capacity of disciples, the remaining Dharma falls corresponding with their interest. Having ripened disciples into the three Vajras, may they attain Buddhahood in the vast dimension of the Samanta Vajra. In this life, the life is conditioned, permanent, and empty. The constituents of the five elements are complete as the Buddha field of five families. Having arisen in the form of the Guru of Yama and Arna, may all sentient beings led by those with whom I have positive and negative connections immediately go to the Kachari mode. Having ripened and liberated the whole range of disciples through many emanations, the appearance of one's own primordial wisdom, and they all obtain the unsurpassed ultimate result.
Very good. Samaya, very good. If anybody, I'll make a PDF available to Miriam of a commentary on the dedication aspiration. So it's a detailed commentary on the meaning of the words, the meaning of the sentences. I'll make that available. And if you would like a copy for a minimal charge of, what, $1 million? Or no, how much does a temple renovate? I don't know. Anyways, for a few $100,000 for that price, I'm sure a copy will be made available to you. I'm joking. I have to be careful. It's being recorded. So.
Mark, there are actually copies.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So there are copies printed of a commentary, a detailed commentary in English on that beautiful aspiration, the dedication aspiration prayer. All right. Just see the staff. And we'll continue tomorrow. Is that okay there, Marta? We'll continue tomorrow with the work on the pagoda? With the work on the pagoda? That good? I think she's the group leader.
No, I'm not.
Oh, yes, you are. Okay. All right, how'd it go today?
Well.
Great. I got some more sanding pads.
Fine. 20 more to do.
Fine. Good. Okay. Good night, everybody. Rest well. And see you in the morning. Some time.
So what do your people say? my people say
I don't have any people. We'll figure it out.
Okay.
We'll build a temple. We can do it in the temple.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll meet tomorrow too.